Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to this lecture sponsored jointly by the European Institute and the Vicente Cañada Blanc Centre for Contemporary Spanish Studies. It's a great pleasure to introduce what I hope will be a long series of such lectures, and this evening to talk to us about Spain and the Intergovernmental Conference is the Spanish Secretary of State for Relations with the European Union, Emilio Fernández Castaño. Mr. Fernández Castaño has been a diplomat since 1980. He's a lawyer by training, which means that he's well prepared to deal with the jungle of Brussels. He's had a lot to do with issues relating to the Intergovernmental Conference, and until recently, until taking up his present post in December, was working on the Spanish government think tank that was preparing precisely for the next Intergovernmental Conference. So we're especially privileged to get the inside story from him here tonight, and I'd like to welcome him to the school. Thank you.
I should also have said, by the way, that after the talk, we hope to have time for questions and a short debate, although we do have to be out as shortly after 7:15 as possible. But there will be the opportunity for questions afterwards.
Thank you. Good evening. I hope that we have time to exchange some views after my intervention, because that will bring me the possibility of learning something on this side of the hall. Maybe my background is a handicap to foresee what is going to happen on the Intergovernmental Conference, because the first thing that we could say is that this Intergovernmental Conference is not going to be merely an intergovernmental business. It is going to be also a society issue, a public issue, which is not going to be only a matter for governments, but certainly for parliaments, and directly also concerning the public opinion. As you know, when negotiating the Maastricht Treaty, it was established in the treaty that in 96 there will be a revision of that treaty. In that perspective, the subjects of that revision were named, were quoted in the treaty, in the text, and they were a kind of catalog of to some extent failures in the negotiation of that conference, which were thought to be solved in the 96 conference. In that text, it is foreseen that issues directed with the related to the European Parliament should be reviewed in this year's conference. For instance, codecision as the mechanics to decide on the part of the European Parliament. The way in which rules were established, the idea of a hierarchy of rules in the treaty and in the decision making was also something to be dealt with in the 96 conference. Issues concerning the so-called second pillar, I mean, the external and security policy issues concerning the internal security, especially institutional decision making, and the role of institutions in that new field of the treaty, and some sectorial policies that some member states were trying to include in the treaty, but got not enough consensus to get it there. for instance, tourism, civil protection, energy, and so on. So that was the approach used in when negotiating the Maastricht Treaty, that some issues that for some member states were important issues should be dealt with in this year's conference. To some extent, also, the approach of the time was to think that basically Maastricht were going to work as planned, and this 96 revision was a kind of service after 4 years millage, and but not a completely new approach or a reform of the existing treaty. From then, many things have changed. To some extent, the Maastricht Treaty has been the last treaty of the Cold War times, and this conference is going to be the first occasion for Europe to design or to adjust the treaties on a new period. The first comment I would try to stress, therefore, is that this intergovernmental conference is not understandable unless we fix it in the framework of the whole political agenda for Europe, which is now more precise than it was the case a year ago. In the Madrid European Council, the chief of governments and state fix an agenda for Europe. This political agenda covers next 5 years and starts with the intergovernmental conference, follows with the monetary union, which is now more defined than it was the case till December. Then this agenda places the beginning of the negotiations of enlargement. Then it is foreseen that Europe will have to deal with the new finance package on how to finance the first years of next century. Then, on this period of time, we have to redefine the new security architecture for Europe. This is not something that we are going to define on our own. It is something that has to be defined with all the partners of who can define this new security scenario, but has also a European dimension and should be also a matter for Europe in those coming years. And finally, Europe has to, that enlarged and more integrated Europe has to define a new neighboring relations with what Geremek calls the third Europe. That is the Europe which is not going to be a part of the Union after next enlargement, and which is very relevant for the future of our continent, namely Russia, Ukraine, most certainly Turkey, and the neighboring countries in the south of the Mediterranean Rim. This is the agenda for Europe, and this agenda contains the strategy for survival of this extreme part of Eurasia if we want to remain relevant in next century. And we have to find a whole logic of this global strategy. We have to find a logic that makes it understandable. What is the connection between the conference, the monetary union, the enlargement, the security aspects, the neighboring relations? And that has to be understood in order to be agreed. Because it is not only governments, I repeat, but national parliaments and public opinion who is to agree if there is to be a success of the strategy. Now, only in the framework, in the context of this global agenda, we can understand what is the meaning of the Intergovernmental Conference, and what should be delivered by this conference next year? What are the changes required in order to fulfill the needs of this strategy? What is the conference for? Well, this time we've learned something from our previous mistakes. We've learned that we have first to aim and then to shoot, not the opposite. And so we are trying to aim. What is the target of that conference? And we've been doing so by reflecting together for half a year within the reflection group. This group has been trying to put on a nutshell what is the need today as far as the treaty changes are concerned. What can be achieved or what can be favored by treaty changes, and in what direction those changes should be oriented. And we have identified basically that Europe of today has to deliver more efficient results in three main fields. The first one is of course what matters to the ordinary citizen, and which is related with the internal life of Europe. And this is not only no longer only an economic project, but it is still mainly an economic project. So the treaty should favor to overcome the inconsistencies that Europe is suffering today from an economic point of view. We have already defined a monetary union project. We think that the criteria and the schedule of this project is both feasible and desirable, provided that we match this monetary project with an economic project, which was on the basic approach of the Maastricht conference. But we find ourselves in a situation in which the machinery that we have today is not allowing to advance on a balanced way whenever we talk about other aspects of the economy. For instance, we have unanimity on fiscal policy, which is in fact preventing a European fiscal policy. And the result of that asymmetric machinery is more and more unbalancing the result. We have a challenge of job creation in Europe, and it is clear that it remains on the hands of national authorities. It is a lot to be done at national level, but it is also very clear for many of us that Europe cannot escape that responsibility of launching a joint strategy for job creation at European level. We have already a single market, we have a freedom of movement of the factors of productivity, and therefore Europe should be concerned by the reality that Europe is not actually creating jobs, is not launching sustainable growth at a sufficient rate that can create jobs. So we believe that there is an economic need to adjust the machinery of decision making so that we can set the path of not only monetary but economic integration, as it was planned and as it has been agreed among us on the Maastricht conference. this is a matter of discussion, and this is something which is affecting the life of the ordinary citizens, and if we are able to put that clearly on the open air, we can have an open debate, and we can follow the negotiation of the conference as something which is affecting our future. Of course, whenever we talk about economic integration, there is also a social aspect of it. We have now a situation in which there is a country objecting the idea of sharing a social project with the rest of Europe. There is a country which is, for the time being, even suggesting that we should do the other way around. I mean, to deregulate, to demolish what seems to be the social fabric of Europe, so that we are more competitive and that we are more like the rest of the world. There is an alternative view according to which the social fabric of Europe is not a liability but an asset. And that what we have to do is to secure that this social fabric is going to remain, that our way of life is going to remain, and that at the same time we have to be more efficient in managing that way of life, and that we can secure this nature of what is the European way of life by both stressing that at a European level we share common values, and on the other hand by enlarging that way of life through the enlargement of the Union, so that we create a critical mass that can be relevant when organizing the rules of the game in next century. We don't accept those among us not sharing this view that it is through deregulation that we can solve the problems of Europe. We think that if we create a critical mass of developed European countries and societies, we can bargain peacefully whenever deciding the rules of the contacts and exchanges with the rest of the world. So this is not a technical debate. This is a very substantial political debate. We are not going to enlarge, we are not going to extend Europe in order to demolish Europe. We are not going to go open to the world in order to destroy what is, in our view, the traits of one of the most civilized regions in the planet. It is true that the solution could not be to protect ourselves in a fortress Europe. That would be a very wrong mistake, because fortress are not the best way to maintain values. We believe in open societies, we believe in exchange and mutual complementary benefit in opening our world, but we believe that Europe has on its social fabric has an asset, and the trait of Europe is in our view complexity. We have a social complex fabric, and we have also a complex institutional life. We understand that the European model is a very complex one, but it is very complex because we don't want to be too simple. We don't want to create a superstate. We don't want to create compatibility through homogeneity. We want to assure compatibility without destroying our diversity. So complexity is our protection, so that we can remain diverse. We can remain different. This is the European way of life. And what the conference should guarantee is that we can be fully compatible so that we can be competitive, but at the same time we can remain complex. And this is a challenge for those having the responsibility of explaining complex things on simple words. And that is the talent of politicians. And that is why in the future Europe can only be a matter of political life, can be a matter of political debate. So the conference cannot be an expert tinkering on institutions, pillars, co-decision, qualified majority voting. If that is not, if it is not sufficiently clear, what is all that for? And if that microscope approach is not supplemented by a telescope approach by which those moves at the institutional level are explained and scrutinized whenever when deciding what is the global logic and the global aim of the strategy. Now, this is our view in Spain, that we have identified the best possible strategy for Europe so that our differences, our diversity can be secured, when at the same time assuring the compatibility of that Europe in an open world. This is basically a 5 years strategy, but in that 5 years agenda, the critical time is the first 2 years. Because what we are going to do from now till spring 98 is going to be crucial for the whole credibility of the project. From now to the spring of 98, we have to agree and ratify the Intergovernmental Conference, and we have to win the Monetary Union. And if we do so, there will be a dynamics which is going to make credible the rest of the agenda. Of course, enlargement is a basic step in that logic, in that agenda. But since in order to enlarge, we have first to believe that there is a common project in front of us. Because what is the meaning of enlarging if we don't know what we are enlarging? So we have to secure that there is still a need for Europe, a need for a European project, and that there is a way to do it. And this is going to be decided from now till spring 98. If I had to stress the main problems that Europe has to solve in the Intergovernmental Conference, I would start not by the economy, not by the institutions, but by the visible expression that we share a common project. And there is a field in which this visibility has to be clearer than anywhere else. And this is the matters concerning the internal security of the Europeans. We have now the terrible threat of terrorism in some countries in Europe. Everywhere in Europe, whenever in our Europe there is terrorism, it is the fight against the law, against the rule of law. It is the fight against the respect of the democracy. And Europe needs a reaction of the democrats against terror. This is a vital moment for Europe, and that has to be clear as a commitment. We cannot pretend that we have a common economic project But whenever we touch on political issues such as terrorism, we are third, I mean, countries treating each other as third countries. We have to decide whether we trust each other or not. If we trust each other, we have to understand that the crime cannot use the freedoms of the treaty and the guarantees that were thought for completely isolated states. Because if we do so, the net result will be that borders are going to exist for the rule of law, and freedom is going to exist for the benefit of the criminals. This is not a rhetoric question. This is not an academic question. I'm sure that many people, many Democrats, understand the political meaning of this today, both in Britain and Spain. I would say that today in Europe, there are two kinds of ministers, of members of government. Members of government that risk their lives just for the mere fact of saying that the law should win over the terror. And countries or governments which for the time being do not have this personal risk. But this is temporary. If we don't react now firmly against terror, against any form of international crime, then we might remember that we had the opportunity at the end of the century and that we lost it. That would not be the first time that democratic Europe was weak against terror. We must learn from history. There was a moment this century in which Democrats were weak against terrorists, because terrorists at that moment were under the flag of an independent state. Now, fortunately enough, we have democracy in every member state of Europe. But still, we have the need to be firm and strong in defending the rule of law. If we do not do that, the atmosphere of distrust is going to increase among partners. Because the only logic by which we should not be confident in our members of this project is that we have serious elements of distrust. And this is going to increase whenever we touch sensitive economic issues or sensitive political issues. I think in front of us, at the beginning of the Intergovernmental Conference, we have two paths. One is the path which starts from the assumption that we still share a common project and that the responsibilities now faced in front of the governments in Europe are asking for a more efficient cooperation. There is an alternative path, which is the path of diffidence and suspicion. And in that path, we can select those among us who can be or which can be subject of confidence. And we can cover that approach with the word flexibility. We can say, well, in the end of the day, we can rely not on all of us, but just on a group of us. And for any of us, the group is going to be formed by different members, countries. And in the end, the logic of distrust could spoil the whole project. This has been our experience in the reflection group. Our main task in the reflection group was to maintain Europe as a common project. There were sometimes good reasons to say, okay, that would be faster if we could get rid of the one who is always saying no. But we think that that one, who is always one treaty behind, is going to see the merits of next treaty just in a few years' time. And between now and then, he can or they can have the role, which is a subordinate role, but not an irrelevant role, of just checking the quality of execution of what we have already agreed. So I think that this conference, which starts very soon, is not a technocratic business. It's not an irrelevant negotiation, and has to be presented to the open air on his real meaning. It's the opportunity we have to increase the efficiency and legitimacy of our system in order to deliver results in a field which is asking for results. We should have very soon a safer Europe without having a less free Europe. We have to have a Europe able to assume external responsibilities without losing the diversity that we always require as members of different countries. But there is a common responsibility in order to keep stability in our surrounding area, and this is something that we have to accept as a common task. And we have to win the monetary union, because actually we have only two options: either an option of monetary peace based on a coordinating approach, or we have the alternative option, which is a future of monetary war. And monetary war in the past was the first chapter of war. And to imagine that we can cheat the rest all the time, playing the monetary factor only in our benefit, is a very childish approach, and therefore a very risky game. We believe that this attitude in the conference could lead us into an approach that can prepare the Union for the next steps. Only if we are able to reform our system of decision making, we will be able later on to agree on the way the newcomers, the next coming member states, can adapt to institutions. Therefore, to block the conference has only one political meaning, which is to block the whole agenda. Till now, Europe has been able to face its responsibilities enough. The balance of the last 40 years is not bad at all. We face ourselves today with a level of well-being which is much higher than the average of the planet, and we have nevertheless critical challenges asking quick answers. Let me tell you two things about my country. Recently, a terrorist band has killed two persons in Spain. One person was killed on the street of his city. The other person has been killed on his chair in the university. I think what we have to protect in Europe, in order to remain Europe, is the city, and the city in Europe has a lot to do with the street and the university. Whenever we are no longer able to walk on the street, we will not be in Europe. To some extent, the city as we know it is only a European product. It is very difficult to find cities as we know them outside Europe. At least this is my experience. I know that there are some cities in America, very few. Manhattan can be considered a city, San Francisco, Boston. Cities in which people can walk on the street and not only on the malls on the outskirts of the town. And the city in Europe is the product of the history and is the product of a political choice, which has a lot to do not only with security, internal security, but also with the fact that at least in continental Europe, we have people in the rural areas. We have an agricultural policy which is fixing people to the villages, to the rural countryside, and so that the cities are not overflowed by people expelled from the agriculture. So when touching economic sectors, we should have in mind that Europe, as we know it, is a balance in which the economy is always related to the climate of the social life. I think that what is urgent today is to protect the city, to protect people walking on the street and people talking freely on the university. Here we are today in a city talking in a university. The moment in which this meeting is a risky game, is a risky business, then Europe will lose fully its personality. I'm sorry to insist on that, but unless we don't understand what is going to be the essential aspects of the conference, we are not going to understand anything. The moment for Europe to fix a common will to maintain its personality is the Intergovernmental Conference. The moment to confirm that we are here to protect democracy and at the same time to adjust our economies to be open without losing our way of life, this is going to be the Intergovernmental Conference. And all the rest are details. Of course, details are very important. And microscope has to be used whenever dealing with details. But if you lose, if we lose the perspective of what is at stake, then we will have very serious problems. I believe that whatever government is going to be in office in Spain in coming years will maintain this approach, because it has been the result of a lot of common work. We have the asset in my country that we understand that there is no better alternative for us than Europe. So Europe is not a matter of political division. I understand that this is not always the case everywhere. I understand that for some parties there is a temptation to play the role of St. George and give Europe the role of the dragon. I won't do the opposite. We are not going to give the dragon role to any member state. That's why I believe that in the end of the day, we can all agree on the way to protect Europe and the way to improve Europe. Thank you very much. And now I would be very interested if not everybody is completely slept and is any question.
Well, thank you very much for that. I obviously was susceptible, as I'm sure the non-Spaniards in the audience were, to the remarks about the anonymous state that drags its feet and It seemed to me that in your talk, you used the second person plural a lot, but when you said we, you probably meant we, the citizens of Europe. But I think perhaps to English ears or to British ears, it sounded an awful lot as if you were saying we in Brussels. Now, of course, you would probably deny that, but it seemed to me that in a lot of what you said, it was difficult to discern a specific Spanish agenda. And I think a lot of us would like to know more. There has to be a specific Spanish agenda. And although it's heartening to hear that if there were to be a change of government in Madrid, that nothing could change vis-a-vis Brussels, but I think there are people here who would need reassuring about that. So could you say something more about the specific Spanish side as you go into the intergovernmental conference?
Yeah, well, when saying we, I was meaning Spaniards, not Brussels. I don't come from Brussels, actually. And I can say we, Spaniards, because we've made a lot to check that. And there is a very transparent way in which we deal with European affairs between government and parliament, both formally and informally. We don't have the kind of emotional approach that the Jew in Britain have towards Europe. We don't feel threatened by Europe. Now, what is specific about Spain? Very little. I would say that Spain is not going to play a solo in the conference as much as other member states will. We feel ourselves in the mainstream. We are certainly on the agenda, on the external agenda. We are members of NATO. We would like a more efficient way to deal with the external dimension of Europe. We feel not alone at all. We also are among those asking for a more efficient means to deal with crime. And I was mentioning terrorism, but that particular manifestation of crime, which is tremendously murder, is not the only kind of crime which worries us. Drug trafficking and any kind of crime, taking use of the single Europe, whereas the police is too nationalistic still, is something which is very anachronic and very inefficient. And again, we don't feel alone. There are member states who feels very much threatened by the idea of sharing in common some means to protect the citizens. I believe that if that single country was more pragmatic, I can bet that the practical results would be better. But this is something that I hope will be a matter of public debate. Then we are basically in favor of a more legitimate and efficient way of deciding also on economic affairs. We are backing the monetary union. We would be open up to extending the qualified majority voting, provided that there is a logic on that. We cannot accept that fiscal problems are very sensitive and environment is not sensitive. If the conclusion is that fiscal policy should remain on unanimous basis and environment has to be agreed on qualified majority voting. But again, we are not singled out. And again here, I can see a member state who has understood that to share sovereignty is to weaken its own will. We don't see it that way. So again here, I'm afraid that we are not going to be making a solo in the conference. It doesn't mean that we will have nothing to say. We hope that we can have a contribution, make a contribution, that we can improve sometimes the way the results are proposed, and we are very active in following the issues of the conference. We firmly believe that there is a chance for Europe following that strategy, and but frankly speaking, I don't foresee any Spanish problem. I foresee very serious problems for Europe, which will affect dramatically my country if there is a failure. But I cannot see how Spain should improve its situation against anyone else. This is not the way we understand it. This is very British way.
Well, thank you for the rectification. Can I just warn those who are in the body of the hall, the acoustics in this room are appalling, so please speak loudly and clearly. The young man over there.
Yes, well, the Monetary Union is a project that now is more certain than it was a few months ago. Why? Because in the Madrid European Council, we had two risks. One risk is to say, well, the Monetary Union is already agreed, no problem in front of us, so we don't have to deal with it. This is going to happen the way it's planned, and that's it. That would have been a risk and a serious mistake. At the same time, we had another risk, and that was to try and solve now all the problems, namely the Stability Pact or the Fitness Club, as Douglas had called it, and the ins and outs relationship once group is sharing the euro currency. To solve those problems today would have been the best recipe to failure, because we are too far away. We have 2 years in front of us to do our homework. So what we have established together with the rest of the delegation, with the member, is that first we are going to decide on spring in 98 at the same time, on the same basis, that is on qualified majority voting, at the highest political level, that is at European Council level, on three issues. First of all, who is going to pass to the euro? Second, how the internal consistency among those passing to the euro is going to be guaranteed. In other words, Stability Pact. And third, how the global consistency between that group of countries of the single currency and the rest of countries and currencies is preserved. In other words, the ins and outs relationship. And at the same time, having in mind that global picture, the vote is going to be cast on qualified majority voting. Now, the point is what happens from now till that spring of 98. That is the crucial question. Because if we launch a winning dynamics, if we do our homework, when approaching the date for decision, it will be clear that this is going to happen. As it was the case with the single market, when we approached the 1st of January of 93, it was very clear that not the whole of the agenda of the internal market was to be obtained at the beginning of the year of 93, but was even more clear that was irreversible. So there was not an antagonism between those seeing benefits and those seeing risk of the internal market. There was a global dynamics approving and reinforcing the program. Nobody was seeing that as the victim of the single market. There was not a division of Europe on the market. Now, what we have to do from now till spring 98 is to follow the convergence path. We have set a program of convergence for Spain, as for any country, together in the Union. And we've been following till now that path. We reduced our deficit dramatically last year, and we passed the end of the year at a 5.9 deficit level, which is the path in order to land in the single currency. The moment is needed to pass last year deficit much lower would mean that we were going to have a currency crash 5 minutes later, because societies cannot accept any kind of transition. So the convergence path is the way to minimize social problems and securing at the same time the consistency of the policy. What is going to happen this year and next year is more relevant to your question than the result of the single currency. Either we are able to follow the path with the social backing, as we have been doing last year. If we succeed on that, then the single currency is going to incorporate also the Spanish currency. Now, what is the problem? What is the political debate? The political debate is on how we do it. Are we going to suppress the social expenditure? Are we going to have savings from the weakest part of society? Are we going, on the other hand, to increase the incomes by just squeezing the most productive part of our society? There is a trade-off there. And this government has clearly said that the price or the cost of the adjustment is not going to be the social package. Certainly we will have limits for investment, but this is also what happens on private life, isn't it? I mean, we cannot always change cars or houses, but it doesn't mean that we are not going to pay what is on the first priority for the family life. And we believe that the social package, the essential traits of social package, is a must. And then, if we can, we will invest. We have a deficit of investment. We need to improve our networks in roads and telecommunications, but at the rhythm we can afford. Well, this is the crucial period, is from now till the single currency. If when approaching spring 98 we are there or very near, is not so dramatic, provided that a significant part of Europe is there. So my impression is that the euro-hostile approach to single currency is desperately trying to fix the photo of today and arguing that according to the photo of today, convergence is going to be very difficult, and they are right. But this is not a fixed photo. We have from now till 98 to do our homework, to do our job. And the reason, I mean, the fact that it is only by extrapolating our difference of today that the critical approach towards monetary union is based gives me reasons to be rather optimistic. Your second question was concerning immigration. Yes. Well, immigration is only an issue now if we are talking on the European scale. The concept of immigration is not relevant on a European scale. We have a freedom of movement among ourselves. So if you are talking about immigration coming from third countries, of course there has to be an increased European dimension for that treatment. There is now an inner group, and that is the Schengen group, which is setting common rules and procedures to deal with immigration. But I presume that this is going to be one of the questions that should be dealt with in the conference when dealing with so-called third pillar issues. It is clearly a pressure on immigration in Europe. I suppose that enlargement is going to come to some extent. There is, because even if it is not predictable that we are going to suppress border controls on the first day after enlargement, but it is clear that the logic is that very soon the single market is going to be extended to those newcomers, to those new countries. And from a demographic point of view, Europe is going to be more balanced after enlargement than today. We have a demographic structure, which is a very old population, which doesn't even replace the rate of substitution. We will have a problem with the North Africa, the southern Mediterranean countries. But that is not only an immigration problem. That is a more complex problem. And I believe that Europe is more and more aware that we need a joint strategy so that people in southern Mediterranean countries can make out their lives there, and not having only as their only vital perspective the idea of coming here. Yes, I think the basic approach on that conference is not that the community or the union has to do more things, but that it has to do better what is required to be done. And in order to do so, in order to do better, institutions have to increase efficiency and legitimacy. That legitimacy can be obtained both by adequate involvement of European Parliament plus an adequate involvement of national parliaments whenever controlling scrutinizing the actions of their governments in Brussels. I foresee a much more parliamentary way of dealing with business of Europe. And even the governments are going to behave in to some extent in a parliamentary way. I think that debates in the Council are going to become public more and more, and so that there has to be a reason to object. I think sometimes if some attitudes were to be public, they would be modified, because the niet is not the way to behave when you have to explain why. So I believe that transparency, openness, is going to help the role of parliaments, both European and national parliaments, and even when meeting at the council level, that council, that meeting of governments, is going to be more and more like a parliament activity. When I mean parliament activity, I mean that the relevant thing is not only what you vote, but why you do so. Yeah, this is the point of view of the Spanish government is that the basic message is that we are not doing the monetary union, the intergovernmental conference, the enlargement, for the sake of it. We are doing that on a whole as a strategy so that in the future Europe remains a relevant region in which we can live as Europeans, and at the same time we can perform as an efficient group of economies. And this is the only reason why we have to do all that. Not for the sake of it, not... there is a detailed logic on each... There is a logic in having a monetary union when you have a single market. Lose a lot of time and money operating in a single market through different currencies. But this is not the vital reason. The vital reason is that unless we create a critical mass of Europe in the world, Europe is going to be irrelevant. And Europe is going to be, the life in Europe is going to be destroyed. And we are going to be much more homogeneously affected than we are now. The option is not to adjust to the world or not. We are going to adjust. That's going to happen. This is already happening. The only option is whether we accept that the rest of the world will decide the way of life in Europe, or that Europe is choosing how to survive and maintain its way of life in an open world. It seems a tricky game of words, but it's a crucial option. And I think ordinary people, at least in continental Europe, make the difference between the two options. Yeah, that was a question that was discussed already in Maastricht, and since then, very, very frequently. Employment has to be an objective. Employment cannot be a criterion. To consider employment as a level, as a criterion, is to go back to what used to be a censitary kind of democracy. Only those having enough income have voting rights. That would be more simple to manage. That's clear. I mean, to set a single currency only in Germany and Benelux would be a more simple enterprise. But the problem is that next day you will have a two monetary zones in Europe, and that is going to affect on a negative way the market. Now, what is relevant is that Spain is a 40 million consumers economy, and that is therefore a relevant part of the single market. And the fact that Spain is in or out is not only very relevant to Spain, but to some extent, to a certain extent, is also relevant for Europe on purely economic grounds. Therefore, that avenue of simplifying the monetary union, that was from a psychological point of view understandable from a man coming from France in a moment in which that was a must for France to gain monetary union as soon as possible with Germany. And we are backing that option. We believe that this is a good option for France, but we believe that this, the only way that it can work is on a European scale. In other words, our impression is that if France tomorrow decides to merge the currency with Germany, that won't solve the problems, even of France. So I think that was not a scientific comment, but a psychologically understandable No, this is not, no, the jobs are not destroyed because of the monetary union. The jobs are destroyed by the fact that Europe is not launching a joint growth strategy. But the only way that we can do it is abiding by the criteria of the monetary union. If we were tempted to launch growth on an inflationary way, we would have not understood the history of this century in Europe. There is a way to do it in full respect of the monetary criteria. And now is the time to understand it. But this is the only way we can try it. In full respect of the balances between what we can decide as expenditure and what we can, I mean, fiscal balance is a need, which is not incompatible to growth. But unless we launch at the European level a strategy for growth, it is not going to work.
Well, the clock is against us, so I think this is an appropriate moment to call a halt to our proceedings. I hope you'll all join me in thanking Emilio Fernandez Castaño for a speech in which he's given us hope that the Intergovernmental Conference can take place in a truly European spirit. Thank you.
Thank you.